Bicatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Bicatra AI. Welcome to the deep dive. You know, for many people, modern art is, well, it's the ultimate intellectual puzzle, isn't it? You stand in front of something abstract or maybe something really messy or even unsettling, and that question just pops into your head. Okay, how? How do I even begin to engage with this?
Right, that gap you feel between you and the canvas, that sense that maybe you're missing the inside joke.
Yeah, exactly.
That's precisely what we're diving into today.
Yeah.
Our main guide is David Coddington's really phenomenal resource, Modern Art. Very short introduction.
And our mission here isn't just like learning the list of isms, cubism, surrealism, whatever. It's about getting the concepts, the mental toolkit, to understand why these movements just exploded onto the scene when they did. You know, why did artists suddenly stop trying to paint things exactly as they looked?
Coddington offers such a brilliant reframing for that. He argues that modern art isn't really a collection of random styles at all. It's actually a necessary, often complicated, sometimes contradictory set of artistic responses to the whole experience of modernity.
Okay, so modernity meaning?
Meaning that huge shift, roughly mid-19th to mid-20th century. Think about the incredibly rapid, often chaotic rise of city life, global capitalism, secular thinking, and total war. The art, he argues, is basically a dialogue with these massive, overwhelming new realities.
I really appreciate that. Straight away, he shifts the conversation from just pure aesthetics to history to philosophy. It makes the whole thing feel less arbitrary, you know?
Absolutely.
So before we jump into the big ideas, tell us a bit about the historian who's guiding us here, David Coddington.
Yeah, David Coddington is exactly the kind of expert you'd want for this. He's a highly respected British art historian, currently Professor Emeritus of Art History at Kingston University, London. His specialty is European modernism, particularly the Paris avant-garde scene and cubism.
Right. I saw his previous work, Cubism and Its Histories. That tells you he really digs into the foundational stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But for someone listening, what makes his take on it, his perspective, so useful here?
Well, what's really interesting, I think, is that he comes from what's called a social art history perspective.
Okay.
So he doesn't just treat art like it popped out of a lone genius's head, right? He synthesizes how artistic innovation is completely tangled up with specific political trends, economic forces, ideological currents. He looks at the whole network, artists, dealers, collectors, the market.
So he's the one who can really help us get our heads around that inherent paradox of the avant-garde.
Exactly. He's brilliant at explaining the irony, you know. These revolutionary artists, they saw themselves as rebels fighting the establishment, the bourgeoisie.
Uh-huh.
But often they ended up being funded, collected, and eventually sort of absorbed by the very wealthy patrons they were critiquing.
Right.
He's great at answering not just what happened, but why the market, in the end, kind of embraced the rebellion.
Okay, that gives us a much more sophisticated way in than just a simple timeline of movements. Let's unpack the core idea he lays out, this fundamental link between modernity and modern art.
So the basic premise is that the sheer variety, almost bewildering variety, of modern art,
mm-hmm.
you know, from impressionist light studies to the deliberate nonsense of Dada, all of it makes sense. It constitutes coherent, you'd even say logical, responses to what it felt like to live through modernity.
Mm-hmm.
He basically replaces that fragmented timeline of isms with one big cultural conversation.
And the themes he pulls out are key parts of that conversation, like the rise of the avant-garde, this whole idea of the artist as a radical innovator, someone often deliberately pushing against society.
Yes. And he also tackles the big turn towards abstraction, which, you know, can look like art just running away from reality. But Coddington argues it's actually an attempt to represent deeper realities, things you can't see, maybe pure forms, maybe spiritual truths, maybe raw emotions. And then there's the really complicated, often uncomfortable engagement with primitivism, Western artists looking to non-Western art, often from colonized cultures for inspiration, for authenticity.
And crucially, he always grounds this in the politics, the incredibly turbulent politics of the 20th century.
Absolutely. You've got the utopian hopes of movements like Russian constructivism, literally wanting to redesign society,
right,
set against the brutal suppression of modern art by totalitarian regimes. Think Nazis calling it degenerate art.
Wow. So that creates this deep tension the book explores.
Precisely. Modernity brings amazing progress, technology, rationality, wealth, but at the same time, it fuels this profound anxiety. A loss of meaning, tradition, spiritual anchors. Modern art, Coddington basically concludes, became the main public stage for debating what it even meant to be human in this new, often fragmented world.
Okay, that's a powerful frame. Let's dig deeper now. How does this play out in specific areas? If this art is responding to the fragmentation of modern life, where was that life mostly happening?
Well, overwhelmingly the city. Chapter 2 really focuses on the city, especially Paris, as the absolute crucible for modern art. The modern metropolis, just think about it. Anonymous crowds, dazzling but fleeting consumer stuff, constant change, overwhelming flux. It just demanded a new way of seeing, a new kind of art.
And he brings in that key figure, the flaneur, which we often hear just translated as stroller, but it sounds like Coddington gives it more weight.
Oh, much more. The flaneur isn't just someone wandering around. He's the detached, observant stroller, perfectly equipped to navigate the chaos of the city streets while staying kind of emotionally distanced. This figure, this way of being, became a kind of model for the modern artist, someone who could capture the fleeting subjective feel of the crowd without getting totally swallowed by it. It's urban observation, but also alienation, all wrapped up together.
You can totally see that in something like Manet's A Bar at the Folies Bergères. It's not a static picture, is it? It captures the social buzz, the visual clutter, that weird mirror reflection showing a fractured viewpoint.
Exactly. And if the city pushed artists towards capturing fleeting external moments, the next big shift was definitely inward. That's explored in the chapter on the mind. This is where art starts becoming less of a window on the outside world and more like a map of the internal self. You know, Freud's psychology that really fuels this turn.
Right, so you get early abstractionists like Kandinsky. He's trying to make the invisible, the spiritual in art, visible just through pure color and form. He wasn't just, like, splashing paint randomly. He was genuinely searching for higher truths.
Absolutely. And then, of course, the surrealists, Dali, Max Ernst, people like that, they use dream imagery, automatic techniques, to try and unlock the unconscious mind, bypassing rational control altogether. So the artist shifts focus from reporting on the external landscape to sort of dissecting internal desires, anxieties, subconscious fears.
Okay, so we've got the external city, the internal mind. What about the physical human form? We had centuries of idealized bodies in art. How did the body itself get represented after modernity kind of fractured everything?
This part of Coddington's analysis really struck me. It's absolutely crucial because the body stops being this idealized whole thing. It becomes a site of anxiety, fragmentation. It reflects industrial stress, the mechanization of life, and profoundly, the trauma of World War I.
Okay.
Think about German Expressionism. Bodies are often distorted, pained, or Picasso's figures in Cubism, literally broken into pieces.
Yeah.
The human form itself becomes a mirror for social and psychological fractures.
That makes sense. Which then leads, I guess, to artists trying to break down the walls between art and life itself. That's covered in the everyday. Coddington shows how they started challenging the whole idea of the sacred gallery space.
Yeah, you see it clearly with cubists like Picasso and Braque. They started taking actual bits of the real world newspaper scraps, bits of wallpaper, chair caning, and sticking them right onto the canvas in their collages.
Blurring the lines.
Totally blurring the line between the precious handmade art object and just everyday mass-produced stuff.
And the most famous, maybe the most radical example of this conceptual shift has to be Marcel Duchamp and his ready-mades. I mean, it's easy to kind of chuckle about putting a urinal fountain in an art show. How does Coddington help us understand that move from skill to idea?
He argues it was a fundamental shift. Duchamp radically moved the focus away from the artist's manual skill, the craft, towards the artist's conceptual choice. By selecting an ordinary object and declaring it art, Duchamp wasn't just making a joke. He was questioning the entire system, the definition of art, the role of the gallery, the authority of the art market. The idea became the artwork.
And that kind of revolutionary thinking obviously had massive political dimensions, which you mentioned earlier. That's covered in Utopia and War.
Oh, absolutely. On one hand, especially after the Russian Revolution, you get these incredibly optimistic utopian projects. Think Russian constructivism, De Stijl in the Netherlands, artists like Tatlin, Lissitzky, Mondrian. They genuinely believed that rational, abstract design, pure forms, could help create a completely new, harmonious, fair society. A whole new world built on geometric principles. The Bauhaus school in Germany shared that belief in design transforming everyday life.
But that idealism crashed hard against the 20th century's reality.
Exactly. World War I, the sheer horror of it, led directly to Dada. Dada rejected all logic, embraced absurdity, made deliberately irrational art as a protest against the very bourgeois rationality they felt had caused the mass slaughter.
And then came the political backlash.
And Coddington documents that chillingly. Modern art wasn't just disliked by totalitarian regimes, it was actively feared. The Nazi regime famously branded it degenerate art. They confiscated it, burned it, suppressed it.
Why? What was the threat?
Because its core values, individualism, freedom of expression, questioning norms, were a direct threat to centralized authoritarian control. It wasn't just about aesthetics. It was a real ideological battle.
Wow. That depth of context really is what makes the book so valuable. So, stepping back, what would you say are the maybe three most powerful takeaways, the big ideas Coddington leaves us with?
Okay, first, definitely back to the core idea. Modern art as a direct response to modernity. Every big shift, Impressionism capturing fleeting light, Futurism obsessed with speed, Cubism fracturing forms, Expressionism showing anxiety, it's all tied to historical context. Urbanization, technology, war. The lesson, art isn't made in a vacuum. It's always reflecting its time. Always look for that context.
Okay, second.
Second, the rise of the avant-garde and its inherent paradox. We talked about this, the artist as the rebel, the critic standing against the establishment.
Yep.
But the key reflection here is acknowledging the tension. That rebellion very quickly got turned into a desirable commodity. The same society the artists were critiquing was often eager to buy and display their rebellious works, which kind of neutralizes the political edge sometimes, you know.
That's crucial nuance. And the third?
The third major theme is that really complex engagement with the other, the critique of primitivism. This was, as Coddington shows, a real double-edged sword. On one side, it fueled incredible artistic innovation. Think Picasso looking at African masks, it helped break rigid Western conventions.
But the flip side?
The flip side, and this is the critical reflection, is that this borrowing was often rooted in colonial attitudes. It was appropriation, frequently stripping these non-Western objects of their original meaning, their spiritual context, their cultural significance.
It's such an important lesson about power dynamics and cultural exchange, even today.
Definitely. And the book is just packed with these kinds of powerful framing ideas that really stick with you. We should share maybe a few core statements that kind of nail his argument.
Yeah, good idea. The first one perfectly sums up his whole approach. Modern art is not a style, but a way of thinking about the relationship between art and the world. Simple, but profound.
Right. And a second one connects art directly to politics and society. The avant-garde's revolutionary ambitions were artistic, political, and social simultaneously. They could not separate aesthetic experiment from broader cultural transformation. They saw it all as one project.
And the third one, which I think really clarifies that big hurdle for people new to modern art abstraction. The turn to abstraction was not an escape from reality, but an attempt to grasp a different, more profound reality, whether spiritual, structural, or emotional.
That third one is so key. Abstraction wasn't about making pretty patterns. For artists like Kandinsky or Mondrian, it was an act of deep engagement. They were trying to find ways to represent truths, spiritual truths, the underlying structures of reality, intense emotions that traditional realistic painting just couldn't capture anymore, especially given the modern experience.
It was about getting at a deeper reality, not running away from it.
Exactly.
So if we take this framework on board, how can Coddington's insights help us in our everyday lives, like beyond just looking at paintings in a museum?
Well, for starters, it seriously enhances your visual and critical literacy. The next time you encounter any challenging visual stuff, could be museum art, could be modern architecture, could even be like edgy advertising, you're equipped to ask different questions, not just what is it, but what is this piece doing? What conventions is it playing with or breaking? What contemporary feeling or tension might it be reflecting?
That's a useful skill set for sure.
And it also helps us appreciate innovation and disruption more broadly. The whole story of the avant-garde, these artists pushing boundaries against huge resistance, it really highlights the courage needed to break with tradition in any field. Think technology, business, science. Radical ideas almost always face pushback before they become accepted. And finally, his critical look at primitivism is actually a really valuable historical case study for thinking about complex ethical issues today. It helps inform current debates about cultural appropriation, reminding us to always think about power dynamics, context, and respect when cultures borrow from one another.
That makes a lot of sense. For me, thinking back, the most surprising thing was how deeply Coddington connected the anxiety of modernity specifically to how the body was depicted. Seeing that shift from the, you know, idealized Greek statue look to the fragmented, anxious, sometimes tortured bodies in Expressionism or Cubism, that really hammered home the argument that the art was a direct result of historical trauma and change.
Yeah, that's powerful. And for me, I think the most valuable lesson, the thing that really clicked, is how modern art stops being just bewildering noise and starts feeling profoundly meaningful once you see it as this urgent, ongoing conversation, a conversation about what it actually means to be alive in the modern world. That shifting courage is moving from asking, what is this a picture of, to asking, what is this art doing? That's the key. That unlocks everything.
It really makes you realize, doesn't it, that the techniques they developed, the fragmentation in cubism, the absurdity of Dada, the dream logic of surrealism, they weren't just playing aesthetic games. They were forging powerful, sometimes desperate tools to try and grapple with unprecedented levels of change and anxiety. To understand modern art really is to get a deeper handle on the modern world itself, and its contradictions are still very much shaping our world today. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.